Hello?
We go out, we hit people in the mouth.
You play to win the game.
Next fan up.
I want winning.
Featuring Pod Vader and the Superfans.
They are who we thought they were.
With the transaction period of the NFL offseason essentially over and mini camps on the horizon, we thought it would be a good time to go around the league team by team and take a quick look at where each team currently stands. And what separates our podcast from anything else you'll hear out there is that we have 32 diehard fans that represent each of the teams in the NFL. And not only do they know their team inside and out, they know their division rivals and situations as well. And I have three super fans here with me. First, I should probably introduce myself. I'm Andrew, the Jets super fan. We're going to go with the NFC today, which is probably a shocker to you guys because of Pod Vader essentially runs this whole enterprise. But yeah, we're going with the NFC. With me today, I have the Seattle Seahawks super fan, Justin. He's probably honored to be going first because he's not, I mean, I guess he was used to winning last year being introduced first because he won the Super Bowl, but not so good this year, Justin. How you doing?
Hey, you know, honestly, I'm feeling really good with where we're at. We'll get into it in a little bit more depth, but I'm pretty cool right now.
Another guy who's also pretty cool, I mean, going with the puns here, lowest form of humor, but we have our Green Bay Packers super fan, Brian. What's going on, Brian?
You're right the first time. I'm pretty cool. Doing great. Happy to be on with you tonight.
Good to hear from you, man. I was really nervous we weren't going to get an NFC North representative, and Brian stepped up at the last minute. So appreciate that. And then, unfortunately, we have our New York Giants super fan, Sam, here to discuss everything that's going on and for him to tell us how many rings they have won in the past couple of years. What's going on, Sam?
You know, like Annie Apple, mother of first-round draft pick Eli Apple, I'm praying for all the thirsty girls sliding into new NFL rookies' DMs.
Yeah, better mom. Eli Apple's mom or Kevin Durant's mom on last night. Kevin Durant's mom really seems to love her kid. I'll give her that much. So we're gonna go team by team, and we're going to go division by division. You think we'd start on the East Coast with the NFC East, but no. We're going to start in the NFC North, and the team that I want to start with, which is it's very odd that we're sort of leading with this team because I feel most media enterprises wouldn't lead with this team. It'd be the Detroit Lions. So the Detroit Lions, their situation was a little different than most teams because they used to have a ton of superstars on their team, whether it being Ndamukong Suh, Calvin Johnson, who their base salaries were extravagant because of the old CBA. But now if you take a look around their roster, it doesn't seem that they have superstars anywhere with Calvin retired, Suh now in Miami. My question would be, what is Matthew Stafford going to look like this year, Brian? He doesn't have Calvin there to be able to throw the ball up to anymore and hope he makes a play. So do you agree with me that you look at this roster and it's just a very no-name type of situation going on there in Detroit?
Yeah, it's a barren wasteland. It's shocking how fast they fell off. They were challenging for the division just a couple of years ago, and then everything fell apart. Sue leaving, Calvin leaving. I tend to agree with you. Stafford is not going to look too hot this year. He's got pretty limited weapons in Detroit. And honestly, I think the biggest reason he may look bad this year is because of that defense. Is not going to look so hot this year. And when he has to score points, match point for point with all the other teams in the division, there's a good chance he's going to be throwing as many or more interceptions than touchdowns.
If you're a team in the NFL with a quarterback need, what would you be offering Detroit? And looking the other way, what would you, as the Lions, what would you be willing to take back if you're going to get, just hypothetically, take Stafford away from Detroit?
To take him away from Detroit? I doubt they can trade him. I don't know that anybody would be willing to pay all that much for him, and I don't know that they'd be really motivated to get rid of him. Honestly, he's starting caliber quarterback, and those are not easy to come by. It'd be hard to pry him away from Detroit. I don't think that would happen.
As a Jets fan, it's sort of interesting that you say that because it seems that our starting quarterback is still out there on the free agent market, and teams aren't willing to pay him what he wants. I agree with you in the sense that I don't think teams are going to want to pay Stafford $16, $18 million a year, whatever his contract is, but he's talented enough that teams are going to want him. As outsiders in other divisions, Justin, Sam,
is there a team in this division that you would say is a contender besides the one that we all agree upon that you think might be able to make a run to the Super Bowl?
To be completely honest, no, not really outside of the Green Bay Packers. I mean, the Green Bay Packers are a pretty complete package. They've gotten better on defense. That offense will be really improved with the return of Jordy Nelson and the return of not quite as fat Eddie Lacy. I think that's a huge upgrade. So I can see them being a real contender. The other three teams, I just don't. I know a lot of people are getting really, really high on the Vikings. I don't think they have a quarterback. I could not be lower on Teddy Bridgewater. I like what the Lions are doing. I think they're making the right moves. They've added a bunch of offensive linemen to keep Stafford from getting beat up and hurt. They added some pieces on defense, but they haven't added any weapons on offense, and they lost Megatron. So at least this year, I don't see them as a threat. And the Bears, man, they're the Bears. I'm not worried about the Bears right now.
I would say, as an insider to that division, that the Vikings definitely pose the greatest threat to the Packers. I mean, they won the division last year. I think they're a playoff-caliber team. I think the NFC could support two teams from the North, but I definitely think the Packers are still the one to beat, which may or may not be why I'm their super fan.
You know, I would go so far as to say that to me, the Vikings are like the Seahawks from 3 years ago, where the whole team, if you look at the roster top to bottom, is pretty stacked. I think that's going to be a really good defense with a great running game. There's some nice pieces on offense. To me, the difference, though, is the guy who's calling, you know, making the calls behind the line and making the throws. Teddy Bridgewater has a pop cap arm that cannot push the ball downfield, and I don't think that's ever going to change. And that may be enough to win the division, because there's a lot of teams who aren't terrific who you can squeeze by with. But as long as he is the quarterback, I don't see them ever being a serious threat for the NFC overall.
I'll tell you what, that made me feel pretty good. As far as Chicago, I mean, if you could choose between Stafford and Cutler, who would you pick? Or which of the three quarterbacks that are not Aaron Rodgers would you like to build a team around?
Well, long term, I'd choose Bridgewater. I'm more of a fan of Bridgewater than you guys seem to be. I really, really liked him out of college. He doesn't have that big, big arm. But you look at the receivers he had to deal with last year. I mean, he had Stephon Diggs was a revelation in the fifth round last year out of Maryland. He's more of a speed guy. He's not a guy who's going to go up and make a play for a weak-armed quarterback. And then, yeah, Jairus Wright in the slot was a decent guy. But Charles Johnson really disappointed. He was supposed to be that big guy, a quarterback's best friend, that when the play breaks down, he could throw it up to him and hope that he makes a play in one-on-one coverage. Fortunately for the Vikings, they went out and got Laquon Treadwell in the first round, who profiles as that exact type wide receiver. So would it be a disappointment if the Vikings didn't make the playoffs this year? Because as Justin mentioned, they're pretty stacked on defense, whether it be Anthony Barr, Everson Griffin, the Harrison Smith is one of the best safeties in football. They took Mackenzie Alexander in the second round, who I really like, the cornerback out of Clemson. He's only going to have to be the fourth, fifth corner on this team. If you're a Minnesota Vikings fan, are you disappointed if you guys don't make – I mean, of course you'll be disappointed, but what should your expectations be as a Minnesota Vikings fan coming into the year?
I think as a Vikings fan, you have to at least win one playoff game. I mean, you made the playoffs last year. You came really close to winning. And, you know, adding Treadwell and another year of this defense playing together – I think they should at least win one game in the playoffs. You know, you have to hope that Teddy Bridgewater takes a step forward, or else you kind of start getting worried that he may not be your franchise quarterback. So I think this season that defense is just really stacked with Sharif Floyd, Everson Griffin, Anthony Barr, Eric Kendricks. That front seven can just play. And, you know, their cornerbacks between Xavier Rhodes, Terrence Newman, and their draft pick, a team that really should build on what they did last year. And I think you're disappointed if you don't get one win in the playoffs.
We mentioned the Packers as the favorite. My issue with the Packers would be is they're banking on Jordy Nelson to come back at full strength next year. And they didn't do anything in the offseason at the receiver position to help Aaron Rodgers out. Yes, I get it. Aaron Rodgers is, to me, still the best quarterback in football. But it was really – it was straining to watch him last year, trying to just force these plays into James Jones time after time, throwing receivers open, throwing back shoulders. How much longer could Rodgers do this? Is it time for Ted Thompson to go and get more weapons? Or are there guys on this roster like Jeff Janis, who had a great playoff debut? Brian, tell me.
Sorry, go ahead.
No, I was going to say tell me. Yeah, literally, tell me.
All right. Well, I do think that we're actually a little bit deeper at wide receiver than the average fan might think. As long as we can get a healthy Jordy Nelson back, all reports are that he's running ahead of schedule. He was running ahead of schedule last year toward the end of the season. They were talking about whether or not it was the right decision to put him on IR. So as long as he's back healthy, I think there's a whole trickle-down effect that we can see. Cobb moves back to his more natural slot position. Who knows what the hell they're going to do with Devontae Adams. I tend to think he'll be better this year than he was last year, but I wish I had some more evidence to back that up than just a gut feel. Jeff Janis is kind of the guy I think most people are excited about. He has the height-weight-speed combination. He came down with that big play at the end of the Carolina game in the playoffs and really kind of had a little bit of a coming-out party in that game. I think he caught about 5 to 6 passes. Looked really good. Aberderis and Ty Montgomery, and then we drafted a speedster out of Cal this draft. I think the cupboard's actually more stocked as far as wide receivers go than most people would think for Green Bay. And then they added Jared Cook at tight end this year, and we'll see with him. I mean, I wish I had more evidence with him, too. He offers a little bit more to the passing game than Richard Rodgers does, who is basically a glorified Bubba Franks. He's going to catch the ball and get tackled immediately. He's not making anybody miss.
Right. And Jared Cook never really had a quarterback to throw the ball in Tennessee or St. Louis. So I would not be shocked if Jared Cook went out and had a pretty decent year, better than what Richard Rodgers put up last year. So he's a fantasy sleeper guy to look at. But Brian, what's the spot on this roster? Or doesn't even have to be a spot on the roster. Is there just a situation going on in Green Bay that makes you a little bit concerned? I know you guys have one of the best rosters from top to bottom, but it can't just be all roses going into the season, can it?
No. There's plenty of gaps in our team, especially kind of in the defensive front seven, I think. That offensive line that we got is pretty stacked. If Lacy can come back thin enough, we'll be in good shape at the running back position. That kind of completes the offense. But on the defensive line, we had a retirement by B.J. Raji that was, by all reports, a big surprise. One of our starters is suspended for the first 4 games. There's really only 4 or 5 guys that we have on that defensive line that we can expect to be able to suit up for the first 4 games at least, and then we'll get one more body added into the mix. So we're going to be really counting a lot on our young players. We drafted Kenny Clark in the first round. He looks like a guy that can come in and play right away. He played in a very similar defense at UCLA and is at a position where we are – really needy, and we drafted another player from Northwestern, Dean Lowry, in the 4th round, I want to say, and he really profiles as kind of another or a 3-4 D end. But other than that, you know, we're returning Mike Daniels. Dayton Jones maybe plays there, but he was actually lining up at kind of a elephant end position in the playoffs last season, so who knows what the plan is for him. That's a spot that I think we're really thin. And then just on the inside linebacker spot, we didn't really do much to address that. I hope that means that they have more confidence in the guys we have there now than I have, but that's another spot. I think up the middle of that defense until you get to the secondary, it could be a pretty ugly show in Green Bay.
This Jet fan weeps for you, Brian.
Wait, so I might actually be higher on Green Bay's moves than the Green Bay super fan. I love the moves that Green Bay made. To me, these are all like they're not checkers moves, they're chess moves where each one has more than one effect. Just by getting guys healthy, when you bring back Jordy Nelson, you get better at your number one wide receiver spot and your number two wide receiver spot because Randall Cobb goes back over there. In addition, bringing in Blake Martinez, an inside linebacker, not only do you get a true inside linebacker who's, I think, going to be a pretty good player, but that means that you get to keep Clay Matthews at outside linebacker and doing what he does best. So, you know, these are moves that I think are multifaceted and improve the team in a lot of places. Your question is, do they do enough to help Aaron Rodgers? Well, I think they made his line better, and he has to carry less of the burden because I think the defense will be improved, and he's got better weapons. Yeah, I think they did a lot to help Aaron Rodgers out. I think Green Bay has to be one of the absolute top contenders to represent the NFC in the Super Bowl this year.
I love hearing that, and necessarily disagree either. I think it comes down to, in the NFC, I think the close race between Seattle and Green Bay.
Well, not that close.
Yeah, right. We'll see.
Well, I know Sam's not too worried about the Packers because they seem to beat them every single time they play in the playoffs. But between the Packers, Cardinals, Panthers, and Seahawks, which team for you is the favorite in the NFC?
It's got to be the Packers, I think. I think you just have to go best quarterback until further notice. And I think with Jordy Nelson returning, that receiving core gets much better. You know, Eddie Lacy gets more room to run. Now he's a little thinner, so he gets even more room. So it's, I think it's the Packers. I mean, Rodgers almost did miracles last year, so, you know, I'm not doubting him.
I appreciate you staying with the Packers, Simi, because I sort of asked a question that would sort of take us off track because we're supposed to be going division by division. So another team in this division that made a lot of moves this offseason is the Chicago Bears. Brian, we know how you feel about the Bears as a franchise, but you look at their roster, what sticks out to you?
I think they've made a lot of improvements this offseason, honestly. And I've said all along that I think when that coaching staff that they hired a couple of years ago was really good, and that if they could ever get some talent on that roster, that they could be contenders. I think they're obviously not contenders yet. I think there's a lot of room for improvement. And honestly, they lost a lot of pieces on that offense. But I think they're building some nice defensive talent on the other side of the ball. And they picked up a couple of inside linebackers that I would have liked for the Packers to target this offseason. And then I thought they had a really good draft. Leonard Floyd is obviously a pretty big boomer bust player, but if he booms, they're going to be good on defense. Then they got Jonathan Bullard and a steal in the third round too. So I think they're probably still going to finish roughly in line with the Lions for the basement of the division, but I think that they're building for the long term too. I think those are chess moves, not checkers.
Yeah, they still have big holes on the offensive line and in the secondary, but they really shored up their linebacking core, signing Jarrell Freeman and Danny Trevathan. And yeah, they brought in Leonard Floyd, and Pernell McPhee had a great first year in Chicago. They also brought in Akeem Hicks, who was very good when he came from New Orleans to the Patriots. Shocker. So they brought him in, and they have Kevin White coming back, who was their first round pick, who missed all of last year to play opposite Alshon Jeffrey. So I actually like where the Bears are long term, but you mentioned the coaching staff. I think John Fox is a guy you bring in to get you the step before the Super Bowl. This past year is a prime example of that, as the Broncos hired Gary Kubiak, who isn't the greatest coach in the world. Now, you don't think Gary Kubiak, Super Bowl winning coach, but that's what he is now. So I could see this team getting rid of Jay Cutler after next year, finding a franchise quarterback, and then hiring a new coach. And that's where the next great Chicago Bear team is going to come from.
Could be. I mean, that's a lot to fall into place, but yeah. I don't necessarily disagree. I think Fox is probably the type of guy who could get you to a Super Bowl maybe, but not exactly win one. But the rest of the guys they got on that team, I think they picked up Vic Fangio, and I was happy to see the Dolphins poach Adam Gase because he was one guy that actually made Cutler look like competent in that offense. So I'm happy to see him out the door the very next year, and I guess we'll see what comes next.
So it's ranking time, and because that's what fans love. And yeah, it's May 9th right now when we're taping this, but we're going to do this for each division. I'm going to go around the room, metaphorical room, and rank each team in this division. I'll start. The Packers are still the team to beat to me. I don't see Bridgewater making big enough jump in his second year to overtake them. Even though the Vikings did win the division last year, I think people sort of forget that. The Vikings would be number two. The Bears would be number three for me. I like where they're going. I think Cutler would be competent enough to get them to a 6-10, 7-9 type of record. I think the Lions might be one of the worst teams in football, so they're number four to me.
I would agree. I think the Packers are number one. I think the Vikings are probably number two. Bears are a distant third, and Lions maybe just a few notches behind the Bears.
Do either of you guys disagree with those rankings so we could save some time?
No, that's my ranking exactly for all the reasons you mentioned.
Well, maybe I'll try and not give so much information next time so we'll have a more fluid conversation. Yeah. Okay, so we're going to move on to the NFC East. Yeah, they're not the first division we talk about, but we'll make them the second division we talk about. Sam, we'll start with your Giants. What was your impression of what happened this offseason with Jerry Reese going out, bringing in a ton of guys, whether it be Olivier Vernon, Janoris Jenkins, going in the draft, getting Eli Apple. It sort of seems that Jerry Reese is fighting for his job. And do you think that he's taking his job security too, I wouldn't say seriously, because everyone wants to keep their job, but he's making it the paramount issue. And do you think he's hurting the team's overall flexibility in the future by making all these moves?
Jerry Reese, I think, did what he needed to do to create a winning team for Eli Manning in one of his last few seasons. You know, his whole thought process was clearly evident throughout. He was going to start by creating a dominant defensive line, adding Harrison for the run, adding Olivier Vernon to pass rush. And then he decided that he was going to just get his secondary in place, and he got Janoris Jenkins, who does get beat a lot, but also was a very good cornerback last year. And if that line is doing what they're supposed to and creating pressure, then him and Dominique Rodgers-Cromartie, two ball hawks, really can maximize their value. And then you add Eli Apple, and what he does is he's a great man cover, and he can just take away one side of the field. So if you look throughout the draft and the offseason process, it's a very linear thought process and one that makes sense. And, you know, besides that, you picked up Darian Thompson, who could be a free safety in the NFL for years to come. They picked up Sterling Shepard, who I love, to create some more room for Odell Beckham. They got Paul Perkins, a running back at UCLA, who I didn't think they would take, but, you know, I've been watching a lot of tape on him and reading a lot, and he seems like the perfect back for them. So my hopes are actually pretty high. I think Jerry Reese both secured his job for the future because he made this team better, and I like a lot of the players we got.
My issue would be was that there was too much to do. They didn't do anything about their offensive line at all. Eric Flowers, who most people still think is a better suited at right tackle, is your starting left tackle, and he really struggled as a rookie. He was Pro Football Focus's lowest rated left tackle. And on the right side, you have two below average players in John Jerry and Marshall Newhouse. So there were still issues with this team, and I don't see them being able to win a Super Bowl this year. What does Jared Reese have to do to keep his job? Is he going to have to make the playoffs?
Yeah, and I think this is a team that can make the playoffs. I mean, if you remember, this is a team last year that lost almost every game. They lost in the last second. So it would take a small margin of improvement to push this team into the playoffs, in my opinion. And you're right, he couldn't go out and fix everything all at once. And I think he did a great job of fixing everything besides the line. And, you know, maybe next offseason and next draft he'll do that. But for right now, besides the offensive line and those linebackers, it's a team without many holes. And, I mean, I know, granted, those are two big things, but you can't fix everything all at once.
Right, and that would be my issue. You look at what Brian's team, Ted Thompson, does, is that he gradually fixes these things. He has a long-term plan in place that he lets guys sit for a year, maybe two, and then he plugs them right in. It seems the exact opposite of what the Giants are doing, and that's just a product of poor drafting the past couple of years. Whether you make that just because the players themselves weren't good or just the catastrophic amount of injuries. Justin, when you look at the Giants, what do you see?
I see a lot of moves I love and a lot of moves I hate. You know, just starting with bringing back Ben McAdoo is a move, and I've talked about this before, I love the move. I think that what he's been doing with Eli Manning and with the offense has been tremendous. I love that they went out and got another wide receiver. I'm hoping Victor Cruz comes back somewhat healthy, but I'm not holding my But if you have a good option outside of Odell Beckham, that's a really, really good situation. And I still think that Eli Manning, if you give him pieces, can be a very, very high-end quarterback in the league. What I don't like is I don't like their secondary. I think that they invested a lot, both in terms of draft capital and in terms of money, into players that I think are just meh, just kind of blah. So I think that's a serious misallocation of resources. They didn't do anything in the draft to address their defensive line. I think that's a huge, huge mistake because that's a position of great wear and tear. They spent a bunch of money on players, especially Olivier Vernon, who, to me, I think that he is a tremendous second-best defensive lineman on your team. And if he's not pulling all the double teams, it's incredibly productive. But when you bring him in to be the guy, I don't see him being capable of that. So this is a team that I think did as much good as they did bad and are going to spin their wheels and are going to be a second-ish third-place team who is kind of in contention until the last couple of weeks.
If you look at the teams that are consistently at the top of the NFL, it's the teams that don't go out and make the splashy move. It's the teams that grow a lot of their own talent internally or kind of have a system in which they can bring in guys at a discount like the Patriots do and really just build with a long-term vision. And I totally agree with what you're saying, Andrew, that it seems like Jerry Reese is doing everything he can to conserve his job there at least one more year, and I think it's going to blow up in his face. Sorry, Sam.
A smile on my face right now. The smile on my face right now, because it seems like the Giants are sort of becoming what the Jets used to be, and that they're going for the flashy move. Maybe it'll work out. Maybe it won't. But as Sam likes to remind
they got two rings. That's exactly my point. And
exactly. As Sam likes to remind us, they got two rings in the past, what, 5-6 years? We got it. But we're living in the now. And another team that seems to sort of be living in the now, the Dallas Cowboys, because the fourth pick in the draft, they had the opportunity to take, by many people's accounts, the top defensive player in the draft in Jalen Ramsey, who would have fixed a big hole for them in the defensive backfield. But instead, they went with Ezekiel Elliott, a running back, which was the highest a running back has been taken since Trent Richardson. This is a very polarizing discussion because a lot of people love what they did. A lot of people don't get what they did. Sam, you're the Giants fan, so tell me, what do you make of your division rival going out and spending a top pick on a position that it sort of seems like the NFL is moving away from spending top draft capital on?
Yeah, I mean, you have to imagine that they thought Ezekiel Elliott was the next Adrian Peterson. That's the only excuse, and even if so, I think it was a reach because that offensive line itself can produce a top rusher. So how much better do they get by having a top running back? I guess we'll figure out this year, but as a Giants fan, the Dallas offseason and draft makes me happy. They took Jalen Smith in the second. He's not going to play. I don't think Ezekiel Elliott's going to be great his rookie season, so I think they're going to not be good until Tony Romo's retired or too injured to play anymore. So as a Giants fan, as an NFC East fan, the Cowboys have pretty much this offseason told me that they're not going to compete for a few years, so that's good news.
Wow.
I disagree. I think that this is exactly a move that they're making so that they can compete this year. You could make the argument that Ezekiel Elliott has the biggest impact on that defense than even picking a defensive player in the draft. So I think the reason they did that is because they see this as kind of a last gasp. If you can get past this year, Sam, I think you're in good shape because I don't know how many more years Tony Romo has, but you're still going to have to get past this year.
I mean, I would agree with you, but then if that's the plan for the Cowboys, how do you pick Jalen Smith? Doesn't make sense.
Yeah, that was my reaction when they made the pick, but I sort of look at what my Jets are doing, that the best teams sort of concurrently build for the present and build for the future. So I don't think one sort of precludes the other in this situation. I think Jalen Smith, by all DraftKings accounts, was a top five type of guy before he got hurt. And by Brian's point of the Cowboys taking Ezekiel Elliott, it does make them better on defense. You just look 2 years ago, going into the season, a lot of people were saying that this Dallas Cowboys defense was going to be the worst ever. Not the worst in the league, the worst ever, just based on personnel. And you look at their personnel now, they have big upside guys on the D-line like Randy Gregory and DeMarcus Lawrence and Tyrone Crawford, guys that might not be superstars, but they could make an impact. And Sean Lee, if he stays healthy, is a stud, but as we know, that's a thing that doesn't really occur very often. And yeah, they have holes in the secondary, but that offense, if Romo stays healthy, is going to be unstoppable. Sam made the point that he doesn't see how much better could they actually be if they took Ezekiel Elliott versus what they had Darren McFadden last year. The answer to me is much better because Ezekiel Elliott, not only is he one of the best runners in the draft, not only is he the best pass catchers to come out in a long time, Todd McShay says he's the best pass blocker he has seen on tape since he's been doing scouting. And that is a huge factor, especially with Tony Romo under center. I could see the Cowboys winning games 38-35 all year, and they're going to be on the top of the team that you want to watch week to week. I'll tell you this much. Fox is going to show them. So the rest of the country is going to see it happen.
I'm going to disagree with you. I think that Ezekiel Elliott is a great player, but he's not a transcendent talent. He's not a number four overall pick. To me, that is absolutely ludicrous. I can't believe that pick. And will he be better than Darren McFadden? Probably. Do we expect he's going to be more productive than DeMarco Murray was 2 years ago? No. And the Cowboys go out and they spend spend some money on Alfred, so I think it's going to be super productive in the system that they're running. I don't know that they upgraded much offensively. I have very little faith in Tony Romo staying together. I honestly believe that we're about to start to see the downturn to Dez Bryant's career. Jalen Smith is a player. He could be incredible a year or two from now after he recovers from injury, but that's not where this team is. This is a team that's getting older and more beat up and more hurt, and it's not a team that is improving key areas. What they have going for them is an incredible offensive line and a couple of really nice weapons, but that's not going to do the job. I don't see a team with a clear vision for what it wants to do. And I think that has been basically the Cowboys since the 1990s. This is such a Jerry Jones draft. And if I were a Cowboys fan, I would be so sick of a draft like this by now.
A team that does really know what direction it's going in, because they gave up a lot to move up to number two to draft their future quarterback, is the Philadelphia Eagles. And yeah, they now have three quarterbacks on their roster who would be starting for my New York Jets if the season started tomorrow. So my question to you guys is, with all the investment they made in Carson Wentz, and it seems Sam Bradford has finally come to his senses that he doesn't deserve to be handed a starting job anywhere in this league, no matter how much money he's being paid, what week does Carson Wentz start, Sydney?
I think he starts week one. I don't see a reason why he doesn't. Every morning I wake up and thank God that the Cowboys and Eagles are in my division, because now it just seems like a two-team race this season. I just don't understand. I didn't understand that move. You have Sam Bradford. You just signed Chase Daniel. I think you want to give him a chance to see what he can do. It just really doesn't make sense. I mean, Carson Wentz has all the measurables, but I'd be curious to see how many players he played against have either played in the NFL or projected to play in the NFL. I doubt it's very many. You know, the game speeds up very quickly for players. So I'll be interested to see. I'm not scared of the Eagles. It's just another team that seems to have mortgaged their future, and we'll see what happens. But I'm not bullish on the Eagles.
Coming from the Giants fan about mortgaging their future, what about you, Brian?
I don't know how to feel about the Eagles, to be honest. I think they've made some good moves. I think they got rid of a bunch of guys that Chip Kelly gave the world for and weren't really that good of football players. So I liked what they did with that, and I thought they did a good job of locking up their own. I think this offseason, I know they signed Felix Cox. Fletcher Cox. Felix Cox was
Yeah, Sicko.
We did not go by Felix.
Sicko would come after you. Hey, be careful.
Right. And they signed that tight end, too. But overall, I think the quarterback position is really confusing. I don't know what their thought is with that, other than they just panicked and they didn't want to give the job to Chase Daniel. And then they knew that Sam Bradford wasn't going to be able to make it through the season, so they risked everything they had this year and next year, and they're picking the 3 years from now that they're giving up for this. Yeah, it's just hard to understand what their thought process was at quarterback, other than they just didn't have a long-term plan.
Yeah, even beyond that, Andrew, right now, can you name any skill position players that aren't tight ends on this Eagles team?
I mean, Jordan Matthews is a guy, and I mean, I'm not going to lie to you and say I don't have the depth chart up in front of me, but they did take Nelson Agholor in the first round last year, and a report came out this week that he was playing hurt halfway through the year. And yeah, I don't really take much out of that, because I feel about like 80% of the league is hurt, and this is a rookie, so he sort of has to play through it. But I look at the rest of this roster. I really, really like what they did on the offensive line. Left to right, they seem really solid. Jason Peters is still one of the best tackles in football when he's healthy. They brought in Stefan Wisniewski, who is a very good center. They're going to play him at left guard. Jason Kelce is still a great center. They brought in Brandon Brooks, from Houston, who's a huge dude who could really move. And then you got Lane Johnson on the right side. The problem with Philadelphia last year was their guard play, and it seems that they have really upgraded that position. The position that I would look at is the secondary, because right now their top corners are Leodis McKelvin, Nolan Carroll, and they're hoping Jacory Shepard could come back after a lost rookie season. They do have good safeties in Malcolm Jenkins and the newly signed Rodney McLeod, who they brought in from the Rams. But I look at the secondary as an issue. The Eagles are going to have to win this year because they don't have the first round pick next year. So they have more incentive than any other team to win right now. So if they feel that Bradford gives them the best chance to win this year, they're going to play Bradford. But I actually think Carson Wentz is a better quarterback than Bradford to begin with. So we already got Sam's opinion. Justin, what's your opinion on the quarterback situation in Philadelphia? If you're Doug Peterson, who do you put under center in week one?
I think you put Sam Bradford under center. I mean, especially at the latter half of last year, he did play really, really well. And I think it's something that's something that they can build off of. They're giving him that much money. They're going to play him. You don't give him that much money if you don't. What I like about what they've done is it seems to me like they're swinging for the fences. They want to get really good really fast. And so it's either going to be a home run or they're going to strike out. They only had two picks in the first before round five, which is terrifying, especially when you don't have a very complete roster. If they trust their scouting department and they think they can pull great players out of rounds 5, 6, 7, then they might be able to put together a really solid team. If not, though, don't put out this quarterback that you moved up and cost so many picks in there. You know, use this expensive option you have. Keep Chase Daniel as the backup. Keep Carson Wentz as the number three on your depth chart and do this old school thing you never see anymore of letting the guy sit and learn. If you do that and the team is lousy, Carson Wentz isn't getting shell-shocked. He's not getting beat up. He's not getting booed. He's not having people question him. If you can do that, I think you have a chance to develop him. If you give in to pressure, if you're struggling, and you put him in too soon when you don't have to, you've got two pretty decent options ahead of him, I think you're making a serious, serious mistake. In terms of their depth chart, their total accumulation of talent at that position might be the most in football. They have a starting NFL quarterback, I think, in Sam Bradford. They have a very high-end back in Chase Daniel, and they have a guy who, you know, could be a top quarterback of the future in Carson Wentz. They just have to use those resources, right? You know, I've kind of talked about this before, but Steve McNair, Rich Gannon, Horner, Joe Flacco, Tony Romo, these guys all have the same thing in common. They come from FCS schools. The fact that Carson Wentz comes from an FCS school is the only knock they have against him, and I think that knock is a bunch of garbage. I think he has the potential to be a star in the league. Just don't ruin him by rushing him to the field.
So we've talked about the three teams in the NFC East, but we still haven't talked about the division champions, and that's the Washington Redskins. That's not something I thought I'd be saying coming into last year, but that's what happened. And after all the moves they made this offseason, getting Josh Norman or taking Josh Dotson in the first round as another wide receiver, Simi, do you think they're the favorites in the division?
Yeah, I mean, as much as you can be a favorite in the NFC East, I think it's them. They were good last year. They only got better. Josh Dotson, I think, was a great pick. So was their second-round pick of Sua Cravens. I think he's just an NFL player. They'll find a place to play him. You know, Kirk Cousins was pretty good last year. If he takes another step up, they have three real receivers. They have Alfred Morris in the backfield. They'd probably be the favorite, but again, we're in the NFC East, where being the favorite means you're the only team to go 9-7. So it'll be an interesting season to see what they can do.
Well, to even further your point, they actually don't have Alfred Morris in the backfield, which is actually a good thing because he didn't show much last year. It seems like his explosion was gone. But they took Matt Jones, who had a decent rookie year, and they seem to be solid everywhere, but it still comes down to Kirk Cousins for me. As a Jets fan, I look at Kirk Cousins, and I see Ryan Fitzpatrick. You put weapons around him, Jordan Reed, Pierre Garçon, DeSean Jackson, Jameson Crowder, we mentioned Dotson. Yeah, he could be successful, and he probably will be successful. But now you have to pay this guy, and he's on a franchise tag for $19-20 million. And if he continues to play like this, they're going to have to pay him even more. And I wouldn't pay him. It's just the traits that he shows. I don't think he's a top-tier quarterback, but maybe competent quarterback play is so hard to find that's the guy you invest in. Justin and Brian, you guys have legit elite starting quarterbacks, so you probably have a good perspective on this. If you were the Redskins, what would you do when it comes to Kirk Cousins?
I think it's all about what he does this year. I was advocating for the franchise tag the entire offseason. I'm glad they did it. Kirk Cousins could be a really, really good quarterback. He has some physical abilities, some leadership skills, and he's a pretty easy guy to root for. He's just got kind of a good personality, and he's handled some really messed up situations really well. But he's also played just some garbage interception machine quarterback in the past. If last year is who he is now, I think you sign him for long-term, and I think he's your quarterback going forward. If he regresses, then all these moves you made to make the team better are for nothing, because he's going to be giving the ball left and right. If he improves, then you're a legitimate contender. I think the entire fate of the team rests on his shoulders more than almost any other quarterback in the league right now. So, I mean, good luck, Captain Kirk. Man, I wish you well.
Just a note, you can win 2 Super Bowls with a garbage quarterback interception thrower.
We get it. We get it. And it's good. It's good to know that that's what you deem Eli Manning to be. I'm going to cut that up, even though the sound was a little choppy, but you'll have some plausible deniability, but we all heard it. The Redskins, they won the division last year, but I look at the NFC East as a whole from last year to this year. I think there's a big jump. I think there are four. You can make an argument for all four of these teams to win a division. Justin, rank the teams for me 1 through 4. It's early, but if you had to make a prediction of what the NFC East standings are going to look like, what do you got?
NFC East is hard because I think what you're doing is you're busting out the crystal ball and you're predicting the fates of each of their quarterbacks. So I think Kirk will continue to be good. I think they'll be number one. I believe that Tony Romo is going to have a healthy year for the first time in a long time, and they'll be number two. I think we're going to see the Eagles come in at number three. I think Bradford is going to continue his pretty strong play, and then the Giants will come in at number four. But I think you're going to see the fourth team within about 2 games of the first place team, just like we do every year with this division.
So you're not going to make a prediction.
I'm very, very optimistic about that, which means I'm going to be wrong on at least half of them, probably all 4 of them.
I definitely hear you, but that's the coward's way out, man. I get it, because predictions in general I find to be very, I'm going to say boring, but meaningless, I think it would be a better word for it, but it's what the people want to hear. So I think the Cowboys have the highest upside of any team in this division. If Romo is able to be protected and Ezekiel Elliott is what we all think he is, that offense is going to be one of the best in football. And I trust Rod Marinelli to be able to put it all together on defense. So I would put the Cowboys at 1. I would put the Redskins at 2. I would put the Giants at 3, and I put the Eagles at 4. But I don't think the Eagles are going to be a bad team. I just think those teams are all going to be in the same 6-10 to 8-8 type of range, and it's all going to come down to injuries. But Simi is our resident NFC East super fan on this podcast. Tell us, where do you see the Giants placing and the rest of the NFC East going forward?
I think the Giants win the NFC East. I don't know what all of you people are talking about. I think second place is going to be the Redskins. I think, you know, they'll probably win a wild card spot. They're a good team. I think the other two teams have miserable seasons. I just the Cowboys need so many players to stay healthy to like be a 10-6 team. I just can't see it happening. I mean, where do we go off assuming that Romo is going to be healthy? He's had the same injury for 2 years, and now his shoulder's being held together by a metal screw. There's no evidence he's going to get better. He's just getting older. His body's getting weaker. Des Bryant's been injured. Sean Lee, like, these are guys that are the main guys, and they all have really bad injury histories. So we'll see what happens moving forward. I think they finished 3rd just on the strength of some of those defensive players.
And I think Carson Wentz and those Eagles finish last and win like 5 games.
I'll tell you, the Browns would be really thrilled if what me and Simi both predicted, the Eagles coming in last place, is they would get their first round pick. Brian, what about you?
I tend to think, like all you guys do, that it's going to come down to the last 3 weeks of the season before we have a good sense about who's in this race and who's out of this race. I think all those teams, I would guess they go between 7-9 and 9-7, maybe throw in a 6-10 in there somewhere. I don't see this as being an overly strong division. I think they're all really close in talent levels, just that built differently. So I think we'll see all of them kind of come in around the same range. I think the Cowboys will probably finish in first. I think you don't necessarily have to have Tony Romo in there if you can get that offensive line going and have a quality running back. I think it would be a bonus if Romo's there, but I don't know that they necessarily need that to win the division. Then I think probably the Giants come in second. I really like Ben McAdoo as a coach. Maybe I'm a little biased since he came from Green Bay, but I think they always talk about him as being head coach material. And I think that offense, if they can get some production out of the running game and out of their second wide receiver, could be really good. Third, I would guess probably comes in the Redskins. I think they have a little bit more talent right now than the Philadelphia Eagles do at some of the more important positions. And then lastly, I think the Eagles, but like you, I don't necessarily think they're going to be a terrible team. I just think somebody in that division's got to come out last, and I'm guessing it's going to be them.
So our next division is the NFC South, and we weren't able to get this guy on for the first two divisions, but he's gracious enough to join us to go through the NFC South, and that is our Saints superfan, Chris. I'll just get right to the point. I had a real trouble coming up with a topic to talk about for your Saints. The only thing I could really come up with is that it seems like every year the Saints are the team that everyone's pointing at, oh, watch out for this team, watch out for this team, ever since the Super Bowl. But they've been really disappointing. So tell me, what's different this year? What have they done this offseason that gives you optimism coming into this year?
What gives me optimism? The same disappointing belief in my team that I've had every year since I was a child. I think we've finally put together an average defense. And that's all we need. You know, the reason why the Saints get so much hype every year is our offense is elite. It's one of the top of the NFL year in and year out. That's why we spent so much money to keep Sean Payton, even though we have back-to-back 7-9 seasons. Our offense with Drew Brees will keep us in a game. Our defense just needs to not be historically the worst defense in NFL history, which is what it keeps being. I love to joke and be sarcastic about it, but literally, every year we break our own records for how bad the defense is. Well, we were able to go out and give Dennis Allen a full-time position this year. As much as I love both Ryan brothers, we finally got rid of Rob, who was great if you wanted to go have a beer with the defensive coordinator. He was terrible if you wanted him to be a defensive coordinator. So now we got Dennis Allen back in there, who has had success in New Orleans and had success in Denver as a D coordinator. I think we're okay. I think we might be able to get to a 16-19 defensive rank finish, which, I mean, I think that's all we were when we won the Super Bowl in 09. I think we're 15th. So there's reason for optimism, but cautious optimism, I would say.
There are a lot of points on this team that I see and I'd be concerned about. You mentioned the defense. We'll start there. But it seems that to me there's only really two, maybe three guys who were above average last year that are on that defense, and that'd be Delvin Bro, Cameron Jordan, and Kenny Vaccaro sort of had a decent year after a really shaky second year. They did take Sheldon Rankins, who I really, really like. But I don't – unless Dennis Allen has something up his sleeve, I don't really see how this defense is going to get better. I mean, maybe hope Keenan Lewis has a bounce back year, but the linebackers still look really weak to me. Laurinaitis is more of a name player at this point. And then you go to the offensive side of the ball. You always expect the Saints to have these great skill guys. But you look at their roster, and they seem to have a bunch of slot-type receivers who – I like Brandon Cooks, and I like Willie Snead, but they're not Marcus Colston in their prime. And, yeah, Taron Armstead is a great left tackle, but The right side of that offensive line looks a little shaky to me. They did bring in Kobe Fleener, so maybe they hope he turns into a Jimmy Graham type of player. But I'd have more pessimism if I just being an objective fan than you do, than you seem to be, Chris. What about you, Justin? You're a Seahawks fan. You have sort of a glimpse into the Saints because you guys faced each other in the playoffs a couple of times. What do you see?
I feel like we face the Saints a lot every year. I feel pretty familiar with them. I feel like I'm always seeing it. I mean, they've got Drew Brees, and I really think as long as you've got Brees, you've got a chance. I haven't seen any signs of decline in him. I've seen a huge decline in the weapons around him, but I think they did a nice job addressing that. Kind of like you, I love Sheldon Rankin. I think he's a great, great player and probably the best piece they've added to their defense in a long time. But adding Michael Thomas, the receiver, I think is going to help them tremendously. Here's my thing with them, though. I feel like every single year, if there's a team who mortgages its future by, like, having Drew Brees rework his contract, pushing money ahead, going out and signing, like, your Jarius Bird type of guy, I feel like they do that every year. And that bill is starting to come due. I feel like they've been in win-now mode for so many years that they don't get to win for they don't get to play that card anymore. They just keep pushing this money forward, these older established players, instead of like drafting and building their roster. I like the team overall, but they didn't have that many picks in this draft. I just don't think they did enough to get better, and I just don't see a light at the end of the tunnel for them.
There's I want to address one thing where, you had stated like Laronitis is a main player. The Saints got rid of a lot of those this year, and we were in rebuilding mode, or we were in win-now mode for the past couple of years. We weren't rebuilding mode last year. And as much as I love Marcus Colston, and we'll pound the table, he's one of the most underrated players in really football history, it was time for him to go. He unfortunately couldn't stay healthy. Jari Evans was no longer a fit for this offensive line. And then there's a reason why he's still a free agent. So we've gotten rid of a lot of the expensive dead weight, if you will. And with your name players, you mentioned James Laurinaitis. One of the biggest issues with the Saints is they had nobody to command the team. He's an average player with an above-average brain. So he's kind of my reason for optimism. We were able to switch Stephon Anthony over to strong side linebacker, where he's a better fit. And then we also addressed with Sheldon Rankins and Nick Fairley. I know our patch guy loves to throw some heat at me for him, but he plays a role and he plays it well. So it'll be interesting, but I'm kind of with you, Justin. It's cautious optimism. I'd be happy with 9-7 next year. I'm kind of expecting 9-7. I hope for 10-6.
I think that the Saints really just need to take it on the championship season and be prepared to be really, really bad. I mean, you talk about how they've kind of had the comeuppance already. You guys have $25 million in dead money. You're paying $25 million this year to players who are not on your team. No, that is not a good situation. That's not okay. 2017, 2018, maybe if you can get through this year. But, man, you are not through the dark day contract purgatory. Not yet.
Well, the dead money, they remember, that ends this year. We finally get rid of that Junior Gallette contract and the Jimmy Graham contract. Those are the two big ones. The Gallette one,
you're still paying $10 million to David Hawthorne. You're still paying close to $3 million for Marcus Colston. You're paying $5 million for Jari Evans this year. You're paying for a lot of players who aren't on your team. Again, maybe 2017, maybe 2018, but no. With almost no draft picks and $25 million caught up in players who aren't here, I do not see this team having just the ability to put enough good players on the field. Now, to me, the biggest addition is the subtraction of Rob Ryan, who I think has never, ever fielded a good defense in the history of his life. And his last name was, like, Davis. He would not even be in the league. So I think there's going to be some improvement there. But as a team that I really, really do like and I really want to root for, I don't see it.
Before we move on, there's one thing that I still want to talk about the Saints. We've been on them for a while, but there's been whispers of this for years, And Justin sort of alluded to it, that they're going to have to take it on the chin this year. My question would be, is when is it time to sell high on Breeze? Because, yeah, he's still great. He's still one of the top five quarterbacks in football. And you hold on to that as long as you can. But at a certain point, he's going to fall off. So when do you think, or do you even think there isn't a right time to trade him and get assets back and try and rebuild this roster? I mean, you did take Garrett Grayson in the third round last year.
Yeah, we took Grayson, and I guess suppose the time would be when you realize Grayson's not the guy. But I wouldn't say there is a time to trade an elite quarterback. You know, we've seen success with the Packers are able to go from Favre to Rodgers. You know, that took years of planning with Rodgers. We got to see it with Manning and Luck. But that's the exception to the rule. You know, typically when you lose your franchise quarterback, you're in trouble for many years to come. That's why we're seeing teams like the Eagles trade what they are and the Rams trading what they are, because getting an elite quarterback is that hard to do. So until Breeze cannot throw a ball anymore, he's a member of the Saints. I don't see any reason. What are you honestly going to get for Drew Breeze that makes it okay? I mean, this year's draft, you would have ended up with Wentz or Goff. I mean, I don't see that as being, yeah, I couldn't imagine doing that.
Well, the argument would be.
Here, the Packers traded Brett Favre for a second round pick to the New York Jets in the twilight of his career. So I guess, would you take a second round pick for Drew Brees?
No.
Got a guy use to build the rest of the franchise with for the next 5 to 10 years, or stay on top for another two?
I think those are two very different situations, in that Favre was not nowhere near the level of what Breeze is right now. I mean, maybe he was, because I'm talking as a Jet fan, and watching the first, they started off 8-3 that year, and Favre looked really good. Then he did get hurt, but we all saw what he did in Minnesota. But I don't think anybody thinks Drew Brees is retiring anytime soon. And Brett Favre was, again, still on a year-to-year type of thing there. You're going to have to at least give up a first-round pick and another second-round pick or something to get him. The argument for trading Brees would be the dead money situation, because if you – let's say you guys got Goff or you got Wentz, you're paying him like a tenth of what you'd be paying Brees. And then you'd be able to use that salary and those extra picks to rebuild the rest of your roster. But I at the end of the day, I agree. You hold on to him because you're not going to find him anywhere else. But we'll move on to another team. Saints were a sort of interesting team to talk about. But there's a team that I sort of think is one of the most boring teams in the league. And it's sort of a shame, because our super fan who represents this team is – what if, just based off the argument on Slack today he had with Justin about his hair, our Falcon superfan Tim sort of went off on Justin for calling him out. But the Falcons, a couple of years ago, they had a young quarterback in Matt Ryan. They took Julio Jones, which was a really criticized move at the time because of all the stuff they gave up. But it sort of seems to be working out. I mean, the guy's a monster. But what went wrong with this team, Chris?
You know, honestly, I think it's a combination of they hung on to Smith for far too long, and they gave up a lot for a wide receiver. You know, we see these mega trades for quarterbacks for a reason. And Julio Jones is phenomenal. I hate watching that guy against New Orleans. But I love the fact that they weren't able to build depth around him. You know, they are – and well, unless we talk about the Falcons winning the Super Bowl this year, we're all going to take crap from Tim and Slack, so we should all just prepare for it. We'll call him passionate is the word we'll use to describe him. But, I mean, they're not a good team. There's really one or two positions that you could say have going on for them. And then they have Matt Ryan, who I think is painfully overrated. That guy is king of the fourth quarter interception. So this is a team. I know you guys talk about the NFC East before that. I think the Falcons are a last place finisher there, and I think they're a last place finisher in the South this year.
Well, there's one thing, you look at their roster. they have no pass rush. I mean, Vic Beasley was the first round pick last year, and he played pretty decently. And to be fair, he was playing through a torn labrum all year. So they have him. And they do have in the secondary Tim's heartthrob, Desmond Trufant, at one cornerback slot, who's one of the best in the league. But besides that, there's really nothing in the secondary that makes you say, like, oh, that's an elite player. They took Keanu Neal, which a lot of people deemed a reach in the first round. They want him to be their Cam Chancellor, Deion Buchanan guy, which seems to be in vogue around the league. And then you look at their offense, it's Julio Jones and who? I mean, Devontae Freeman had a good year. But you look at the other skill guys, I mean, they paid a lot of money for Mohamed Sanu. And they paid $7 million a year for Mohamed Sanu, and Eric Decker is making $6 million, just to put that in perspective. And Decker is a much, much better player than Sanu. I really, really don't like where the Falcons are headed. Justin or Brian, do you guys disagree with anything I just said, or do you also think the Falcons are heading nowhere fast?
I think they're the sexy girl at the bar, but only in the right light. I think I tend to agree with you guys that they're probably a little more overrated than they should be. And I think, especially with the division is trending, Carolina is going to be good for a little while. I think Tampa Bay has done a few things to start to build a foundation for that team. And I think Atlanta's probably headed the other direction. They haven't really replaced Tony Gonzalez. They don't really have a running back that I think you can say confidently that you can be relied on for a whole season. And outside of Julio Jones, I'm not sure they have a whole lot on that offense. Matt Ryan, I think, is a middle 10 quarterback in the league. I think between 12 and 22. So not a type of guy that you can really count on late in games, and not a type of guy you want leading your team in the playoffs.
Yeah, I think one of their big problems last year is, and I watched the Saints try to do this last year, we're hopefully kind of crawling our way out of it. Teams that try to mimic Seattle's defense always fail at it. Because it's such a uniquely built defense, and there's so much talent to start with, that Seattle pulled it off. But for a team like Atlanta or New Orleans to try it from scratch, it's impossible. You know, they're trying to mimic what Seattle did with Brian, Sheffield. They're outside linebacker who's supposed to be their pass rush specialist. You know, opposite of Nick Grizzly.
Adrian Claiborne.
Well, then there's that guy. He flamed out in Tampa, and he ended up in Atlanta. Teams that try to mimic it fail. You know, there's so many moving parts in Seattle's defense, and there's so many unique positions. Like Cam Chancellor. There's one Cam Chancellor. You cannot go in the draft. And Cam O'Neill seems like a fine prospect, but he's not Cam Chancellor. And one of the things that makes Chancellor so great is you've got Earl Thomas right next to him. So it's going to be, I mean, I know I might be higher on the Saints than I should be, but man, it's going to be a while for Atlanta to try to figure something out. And I don't know if this head coach gets enough time to even try to make it work.
Now I'm going to come to their defense a little bit, as I know Tim is pulling what little hair he has left at head right now. You have to keep in mind that this is Quinn's first year there. And I think for first year, it was not bad with how bad the roster is. I think that they've got some of the pieces to run the sort of defense they run. I don't think any of the pieces are as good as what we have here in Seattle, but a lot of them are kind of the poor man's version. Desmond Trufant, in my opinion, is a really, really good player and can play that Sherman role. They need to rebuild most of the rest of the defense, but I think Austin Hooper, the first time since Tony Gonzalez that they'll have, I think, competent tight end play. Can you replace Tony Gonzalez? No, literally nobody on the planet can, but competent is a huge improvement for them. Matt Ryan hasn't had any good targets outside of Julio Jones in a long time. And, you know, Mohamed Sanu, you're right, he should not be paid more than Decker. Eric Decker is a way better player, but he's up for duck number two. I think these are the best weapons that they have. I just feel like it's too early to say we really know what they are based on last year's result and their offseason. I think after this, we can see their trajectory. I'm not ready to write their eulogy just quite yet.
Right. And there's one thing that they did do this offseason that I really like is that they went out and got Alex Mack to anchor that offensive line. And from left to right, it seems that they have an above average player at every position there. So Matt Ryan will have time to throw the ball. But a team that I really like going into this year, and I think is going to make some noise that people might not be looking at, is the Tampa Bay Buccaneers. Jameis Winston had a very promising rookie year. And I like the moves they made in the draft this year, not including trading off for the kicker. I know that sort of might nullify everything that they did, but I like the Noah Spence pick. I like the Vernon Hargreaves pick. And my question to you, Chris, was what do you think their timetable is? Do you think they could even challenge for a playoff spot this year, or do you think they're going to have to pay their dues a little longer?
I think they have to pay their dues a little bit longer. The wild card spot in the NFC is tough. It's really tough. So you need to be in the 9 to 10 range to even look at it. So I don't think they're there quite yet, but I don't think they're last in the division like they were this year. They've made some improvement. I'm not high on Vernon Hargreaves, to be honest with you, but I do really like the Noah Spence pick that they got him. And we can make fun of trading up to get a kicker all we want, and they probably shouldn't have done it. But if he's a really good kicker, we're not talking about this next year. And that was a big, big hole for them. So they seem to be making the right moves. As a Saints fan, I love the fact that I hired Mike Smith. That guy is a guaranteed W for New Orleans. He has been for like 8 years. So any way we can keep him in the NFC South, I'm happy. But, no, I think they're trending up, but this was a really bad team 2 years ago, and it's going to take them a minute.
I think the Buccaneers are headed the right direction. I think you did see some promising things out of Jameis. I didn't expect he was going to come in and be as good as he was last year. And then the reports you read about him this offseason sound like he's really dedicated. He's lost a bunch of weight. Apparently, they didn't even recognize him at the mini camps that they've had, or the OTAs, I should say. I think he's really exceeded the expectations that I've had for him. I think that offense could be pretty good. They're building a basketball team to play wide receiver and tight end out there. And I think given the matchups they have to deal with on the defensive side of the ball within their division, I think that's probably a pretty good idea. I think that defense probably has a little ways to go. Maybe Vernon Hargreaves can help out with that a little bit. But I think they're trending in the right direction. I think they could be within a year or two of, a playoff berth and maybe challenging for that division as the outright champ.
I mean, the thing to keep in mind is that they were in contention for the wild card into maybe the last quarter of the season. So they don't have to improve a whole lot to be a serious contender for that spot. And I think they did get better as a kicker. Which, for the record, I could literally talk for 10 minutes about why this is the dumbest decision I've ever seen in my life. I won't, because we have a lot of things to cover. But there is so much wrong with the pick. First of all, being the fact that this guy is actually not that good of a kicker. But I think that Jameis Winston, that he's got the talent to compete at the NFL. I think that improving the defense was a tremendous move, and clearly their focus is this draft, and they did a great job there. Adding good pieces in the secondary, good pieces at linebacker. I mean, I don't think it's enough to make them a contender to win the division, but I can see them playing important football in weeks 14, 15, 16, 17 at least.
To keep in mind, they were in playoff contention, but this is a team that still only won 6 games.
Well, that's fair.
That's more than fair, and that brings us to my last team, our last team in the NFC South, and that would be the defending NFC champions, Carolina Panthers. They let go of Josh Norman for nothing. And to me, that sort of screams a little bit of hubris, because they're just letting go of one of the best cornerbacks in football. The Panthers sort of seem to have this, their players have it, their GM sort of has it, like they have this general demeanor of, oh, we're the best, and they back it up on the field, so good for them. But my question to you guys would be, is there any scenario where the Panthers do not win the NFC South this year? Is there any way these teams, one of these three teams, whether it be the Bucs, Falcons, or Saints, I know, Chris, you're going to probably tell us the Saints have a shot. But Justin, do you see any shot of any other team coming in and taking out Carolina this year?
I do, and here's what that looks like to me. That looks like the Buccaneers take a big step forward, improved 9 or 10 win team. So, you know, they win maybe 4 more games over last year. Keep in mind that Carolina only had 5 picks in this draft. They lost some really important pieces, and their loss in the Super Bowl was devastating. And trust me, I know what a devastating Super Bowl loss feels like. And as much as they say it won't, that absolutely screws up the psyche of a team. And I said this weeks and weeks ago, I absolutely question the mental toughness of this team. I would say that outright. This is a team that to me, and it starts with their quarterback, and I'm a big Newton fan, buckles under adversity. And now they're facing more adversity than they've ever faced before. Come out and be just as good this year? Yeah, absolutely. But to me, it's just as likely and just as possible that they can't get over this loss, that, you know, they lose an early game or two that's not expected, that they can completely implode, mainly because of their lack of mental fortitude.
I think that's really well put. I think it's probably a long shot that they don't win the division, but, you know, an injury here, an injury there, who knows? You lose Keekly or you lose Davis or you lose Cam, and who knows what can happen. I think we saw that with Green Bay last year, and nobody expected our offense to fall apart when Nelson got hurt, but that's what happened. And I could see, you know, from year to year, injuries and the mental toughness of this team, I totally agree with, kind of questioning that. I think it's a very immature team, despite their season last year, that I think there is going to be a lot of pressure on them, and I'll be curious to see how well they handle that. I don't expect it to look like last season. I think they're going to have to scratch and claw with the rest of the top teams in the NFC, and I don't expect them to come out as the number one seed again, that's for sure.
Well, I would have said that coming into last year after the Kelvin Benjamin injury, that their offense would have fell down the toilet, especially with Michael Oher playing left tackle and the right tackle Mike Remmers being a very below average player, but they found a way. Chris, you said before that you think the Saints could go 10-6. Do you think that any of the other teams in the division could give Carolina a shot, or do you think that Carolina just isn't as good as a lot of people think they are?
10-6, I'm ecstatic. So I'm not expecting 10-6. I still don't see how Carolina does not win the division. And I agree with everything you guys are saying. I hate Cam Newton. I can't stand him. It's not because I'm a Saints fan. He just annoys me. I don't like his mannerisms. I don't like his face. There's not really a whole lot of things I like about this man. But he was the MVP last year without Kelvin Benjamin. So this team has talent. And that defense, losing Josh Norman hurts, and it hurts a lot. But as long as they have that trio of linebackers and that just bus full of talented defensive linemen that they throw at you, you know, it's going to be their division. It's their division until somebody takes it. So I think that the Saints have the opportunity if something crazy happens. But Carolina will win it. I don't know how far they advance in the playoffs. Other teams I think will be better. You know, a better Green Bay could very well end their playoff run in the first week. So that's kind of where I'm at. I agree with you, and yet I don't. I don't see another team in the NFC South taking over yet, but I don't foresee them going back to the Super Bowl either.
Very well said. And we're just going to give our quick picks just right now on May 9th again. But I'd go Carolina 1, Tampa 2, ironically, maybe not ironically, New Orleans 3, and Atlanta 4. Sorry, Tim. Maybe you'll have a lot more time in January to play with your hair and make it look as luscious and flowing as possible. What about you, Chris?
I would go Atlanta. Or I'm sorry. Almost screwed up there. I go Carolina first. It's their division until somebody takes it. Football fan hypocrisy. I'll go against my own knowledge of football, and I'll pick my Saints second. I don't think Tampa's done enough to take that spot, but I think they've done enough to overtake Atlanta. I think Tampa goes third. Atlanta, they're in a downward spiral right now. This is going to get much worse before it gets better. I think, especially with them building this new stadium, Arthur Blank's going to start getting a little desperate. You might see a head coach change at the end of this season. That's how bad I think Atlanta gets.
Give me Carolina on top, followed by Tampa Bay, Saints, Falcons.
I agree exactly with the order just offered up. It's Carolina, then Tampa Bay, a little bit of a break, and then New Orleans and Atlanta.
All right, so it seems to be we're pretty much in sync here with this, except that Chris thinks the Saints are going to come in second instead of Tampa, which is the craziest thing said on the podcast so far. But Chris, are you going to stay and join us for NFC West? I mean, Sam, our NFC East representative, already booked, so you're more than welcome.
You know, I'd love to, but I've been sitting in my driveway for the past 20 minutes, and my wife has called me twice, so I think I'm going to call it and go get yelled at.
I'm praying for you, buddy.
Appreciate you, John. It was a blast. Thank you for having me.
No worries. All right, so we're going to go do the NFC West, naturally, the last division. And it's a good thing we have Justin here. And the thing that we're going to start with the Seahawks. The biggest hole, I think, in all of football, to me, is the Seattle Seahawks offensive line. Justin, do you think that Russell Wilson will be able to cover up the warts on this offensive line? Is he going to be fast enough, quick enough, sharp enough to overcome the talent deficiency on this offensive line? Or is it going to be the ultimate downfall of the Seattle Seahawks this year?
You're absolutely right that that's maybe one of the weak position groups in football, especially last year. Can Russell make up for it? Yeah, he's been doing that. I mean, that's nothing new. Especially last year, this has not been a tremendous group. Truthfully, the offensive line is going to be better because it could possibly be worse because they've actually spent some resources there and they're shuffling things around. I think that the offensive line will actually be improved, maybe not league average improved, but I think it's going better. Even if it's not, though, the rest of the team is so good. Russell Wilson is so incredibly good that I still think that my Seahawks are a legitimate Super Bowl contender even without it. You know, one of the kind of under-the-radar move in the draft was taking up tight end Nick Vannett, who, when the offensive line was playing a little bit better, Zach Miller, who's a really good blocking tight end, and Nick Vannett is the best blocking tight end in this draft. He's incredibly big, incredibly strong. But even though he wasn't asked to do much in college, he's actually a really good pass catcher. I think he's just going to be one of the sneaky, looking back, best picks of this draft. I could not be more high about how this offseason has gone. I'm so, so pleased with it. And I think we will not see anything like what we saw last year in terms of the offensive line, because that was one of the worst I've ever seen for the early part of the season before it kind of solidified down the stretch.
Right, but the guys you brought in aren't veterans. You took Jermaine Ifedi in the first round, who Pro Football Focus, I mean, you could say whatever you want about them, but they watched the film. They really didn't like him. Yeah, they know, and everyone knows the guy has talent. I mean, it's obvious. You look at the guy looks like a monster. But it looks like you're going to start playing him at right guard to begin the year. Jamarcus Webb's at right tackle. They're moving Justin Britt inside to center. And Gary Gilliam is the left tackle. And I don't even know who your left guard is. So, yeah, Russell Wilson's going to have a heck of a time trying to make this offense click. And he's more than capable of doing it. I don't think there was a better quarterback in football the last 10 weeks of the season. So he's more than capable. Brian, there's a lack of talent at offensive line. Sort of give you hope that one of your fellow contenders in the NFC is going to be not up to par as what they usually are, because that is just such a glaring hole, and the Packers seem to be a more complete team.
I think they're both pretty good teams. I think we're weak on the defensive front. They're weak on the offensive front. Maybe that cancels each other out. I think they're still probably the class of that division. You look at that, they didn't look good on offense, on the offensive line last year, but they're not going to need to score a million points every game when you got Michael Bennett and KJ Wright and Bobby Wagner and Richard Sherman and Earl Thomas and Cam Chancellor. They're going to be competitive in every game. It'll be a lot of wins, probably 21-17, and I think that kind of the script is already written for Seattle. I think they need to maintain what they've done, and I feel like they've done enough to actually do that. I think if you are going to point to one weak spot on that team, I think it is along that offensive line. It's a pretty big weak spot, but I think a lot of that's mitigated by the mobility of Russell Wilson. We'll see what happens on the in the running game, but it's not like that offensive line was great last year, and they were able to kind of get by with, you know, above average running back play. So the wide receivers continue to be just kind of guys that are good fits for that offense, and you have to think that one of these years that the tight end Jimmy Graham is going to turn it on in that offense, don't you?
That's a good question to ask, because the question I was going to ask you, Justin, is besides the offensive line, what's the spot on this roster that you look at and you're sort of worried about? I mean, I know you guys are stacked. It seems like stacked everywhere, but I mean, it seems like Jimmy Graham would be the spot. Is there another spot that you look at?
Yeah, you know, I feel comfortable with tight end. Really, the two losses that are a bit concerning are the loss of Brandon Meebane, who it was the longest tenured Seahawk, been just an absolute rock in the center of that defensive line. And the loss of Bruce Irvin to Monty's Raider. Those are two really, really good, really productive players that are not easily replaced. So I expect that the defense will still be really, really, really good. But, you know, you're losing some key players. Can you continue to be historically good? I don't know. That's a lot to ask, especially when we don't necessarily have an obvious replacement for Bruce Irvin lined up yet. You know, we've got guys like Cassius Marsh who can play out there and a couple other guys, but that's just a little bit tough, I think.
What about the cornerback spot opposite Sherman? It looks like Jeremy Lane, who missed all of last year after two devastating injuries in the Super Bowl against New England. I don't know why I'm laughing about that, but like, it was just weird that he tore his ACL and he broke his wrist on the same play. It's like just crazy to me. Is that a position? I mean, you guys brought back Brandon Browner of all people. So it seems to be that the coaching staff is sort of worried about it. Are you?
No, not really. I mean, you know, it's one of those things where I think being a super fan is really advantageous, because a lot of pundits in the mocks are talking about picking up a cornerback. A lot of them even had been taking a cornerback in round one. It was ludicrous. If you know anything about the team, that was never ever going to happen. I'm comfortable with where we are there. I mean, Jeremy Lane is a very good player. I would like to have a good guy outside, because I think he's very high in nickel corner, but he has to play outside. I'm fine with that. Therald Simon, if he continues to develop, is really, really good. We had Jean-Baptiste out there. I mean, we've actually got too many corners right now, and we're going to do what we do every year, is the best players will play. There's going to be a competition, and we'll kind of rise to the top. And beyond that, you know, Pete Carroll can turn anybody into a good cornerback. There may not be a coach who is better coaching up any individual position group is than Pete Carroll is at coaching up cornerbacks. Now, I could not be less concerned about that.
Well, yeah, it's true, because you have those three guys, Sherman, Chancellor, and Thomas there, and the fourth guy, it seems to be you could plug anybody else in there. But not only the Seahawks in this division, who are one of the best teams in football, the Arizona Cardinals had an amazing year last year, and a lot of people are picking them to win the Super Bowl. My burning question for the Arizona Cardinals is, how big of a concern was Carson Palmer's postseason performance? He had a fantastic year in the regular season. To me, he should have been the MVP, but he really, really struggled in the playoffs against Carolina and against Green Bay. So as a Seahawks fan, Justin, are you optimistic that Carson Palmer's on a decline based on that two-game sample size, or are you more realistic in thinking that you'll take the larger sample in the regular season?
You know, it's kind of fun. That's a funny turn of phrase, mystic about a decline. I mean, the truth of the matter is, Carson Palmer played great last year. He was definitely a finalist for MVP. I would have given it to Cam, but I think that you're not wrong for saying that he was deserving. That playoff performance last year, though, was awful. And if there's one thing we've kind of seen, is that things like that tend to stick around. It's It's very possible, and I would say likely, if that's not kind of the beginning of the end for him, that's a thing that's going to haunt him. You know, maybe they still go on to win a lot of games. I think with Bruce as their head coach, they probably will win a lot of games. It is entirely possible that that performance has largely ruined Carson Palmer. I absolutely believe that.
What about you, Brian? Again, we have two of the representatives for the top NFC contenders on this podcast. You guys had an epic game last year in the playoffs against Arizona, and yet, even though you held Carson Palmer in check, you guys still lost. So, what do you make of the whole situation going on over there in Arizona?
You're right. He was very good in the regular season, and then the postseason rolled around, and he was horrific. It was hard to watch, even as a fan of the opposing team, how bad he was in that game last year. I think there were two or three passes in that game that Sam Shields, a converted wide receiver, had hit both of his hands and could not catch it, which I guess is probably why he had to convert to a cornerback. But back to the point, I mean, he just fell off the face of the earth in the offseason. I don't know if that's because he hadn't been in the offseason for so long or kind of what the whole story is with that. Obviously, he found a way to pull it out against the Packers, but I would certainly feel nervous, and he hasn't really been the picture of health, and I don't think that offensive line is all that good, and I don't think he's all that mobile. So I think, you know, if I were going to place any bets, I would guess that they're probably going to be playing a different quarterback in at least one of those games this year. And I don't know. I tend to think that Seattle is still the class of this division. Arizona is on the rise. I think they're going to struggle a little bit if they can't find somebody to replace Palmer, but Bruce Arians is a great coach, and I think the defense that the Carolina or that the Cardinals have is underrated too. So I think they're the easy choice for second in this division, but I don't think it's particularly close between Arizona and Seattle. I have a lot more faith in Seattle.
Wow, I think it's very close. I think the Cardinals have one of the most stacked rosters in football. You're right. When you talk about the offensive line, they did pick up Evan Mathis, who was one of the best guards in football from year to year, no matter where he suits up. But they're counting on last year's first-round pick, DJ Humphries, who didn't even play a snap last year, to play at right tackle. A.Q. Shipley is still the center. They're going to have to find a guy to play him. And Tyrann Mathieu is not going to be ready for the beginning of the season. So they do have issues, but I think they're a clear playoff team. And we're going to talk about this team a lot next year. So I think it's time we just move on to another team, because we've been going on for a while, and I'm thrilled because I think there's been a lot of great discussion. But let's talk about the newly christened Los Angeles Rams of St. Louis, as Pod likes to call them. So they went out and they finally did what everybody wanted them to do, screaming at them for years. You guys are a mediocre team. You're 7-9, 8-8 every year. Go get a quarterback. So they traded up. Use a lot of draft capital in this year and in future years to move up to number one and take Jared Goff. My question to you guys is, I don't think they're going to be much better this year. So they go 7-9, 8-8 again. Do Jeff Fisher and Les Snead keep their jobs? Because if they don't, what are you doing to a rookie quarterback bringing in a new regime after you took him at one overall? There's going to be a lot of pressure in Los Angeles to win. And this division, with two of the top teams in the league, I don't think there's any chance they win the division. They might max out a 10-6 and sneak in as a wild card. I think that's very, very, very unlikely. So let's say they do go 7-9, 8-8. Do we see Jeff Fisher and his glorious mustache roving the sidelines in 2017?
Yes. I think the answer to that is yes. I think they go 7-9, 8-8, they're in that range, and I think we see them back for a couple of reasons. I think that the owner, not necessarily a free pass, but I think they've got a pretty decent owner, and I think he'll sort of understand that the disruption of the move does have an impact on the on-field product. And I think he'll give him a little bit of room for that. And if there's anybody who has made a career out of sticking it through mediocrity, it's just sure. I mean, he's proven that he does not get fired quickly or easily, that he's got probably several more before he fills out that little punch card and gets his free ticket out of town. I don't know, you know, what he's doing to, like, smooth over the owners after mediocre year after mediocre year, but he just seems real slippery when it comes to that sort of thing.
I mean, I don't have a very different take. I think the one piece that I would add is I think that Jeff Fisher is in a really good spot to go 7-9 or 8-8 because they did just draft a quarterback. And, you know, Alex Smith turned out to be an okay quarterback, you know, several years afterwards, but he had a really rocky start to his career after going first overall and then experienced a lot of turnover at his offensive, well, even the head coach in San Francisco. And I think if Dan Kroenke is smart at all, that he would at least give Jared Goff the opportunity to play under one coach for at least 2 years. So I think, yeah, he has a little bit of wiggle room there. I don't know, for more than 2 years, I don't think I would see him back if he continues to just hang around and hang around and hang around at 8-8. But yeah, I think he could stick to this year.
Justin, how far away do you think the Rams actually are?
I think they're pretty far away. I think a lot of their top draft picks, guys like Tavon Austin recently, have not hit. I think that they're kept in contention because they do have a coach who's very good at putting out a mediocre product, and they've got a really nice defensive line, but I think they have to improve so much of this roster just to come up a little bit. And I just don't see that happening anytime soon.
Right.
On the flip side, so the flip prediction is if there was one team in this league who is going to beat us twice in the same year, it's probably them.
Right. They're a different team in division games. It's I don't know what's going on there. Maybe Fisher saves up all his motivational speeches for the division games. I don't know. But yeah, it's a very weird situation going on out there in, I was about to say, St. Louis, in Los Angeles. They definitely got weaker in the secondary. They lost Rodney McLeod. They lost Janoris Jenkins. They didn't really replace those guys with anybody. They're hoping EJ Gaines, who had a very good rookie year 2 years ago, but missed his second year with a torn knee ligament, that he comes back and has a good year. And I look at the skill guys that they have. They did take Tyler Higbee in the fourth round, who a lot of people like as a second round talent, but he had a lot of off the field issues. But they don't have that big wide receiver that I trust. I stress trust because Kenny Britt is a big dude, but that's not a guy that you could put outside and expect him to put up big numbers week to week. I just don't think they have the skill guys. Todd Gurley is going to have to carry this offense because as much draft capital as they used on their offensive line last year, it's still a below average offensive line. Greg Robinson has not panned out at left tackle as of yet. Rob Havenstein had a good rookie year. But Roger Saffold had a bad year at right guard, and they got a couple of no-names at center and left guard. So it's going to be a tough ride for them. But the tougher ride of this division, and probably in the entire league over the past couple of years, is San Francisco, throw this out there. I don't think there is any way they are not the worst team in the league this year. In the league. I mean, I think we all agree that they're the worst team in this division, but I don't think there's any way that they are the worst team, not the worst team in the league. Justin, give the 49ers fans and Charlie some hope. What do you like about this team? To tell me one thing you like about this team that maybe can give these fans some hope.
You know, I can give you a couple. I think that we actually disagree a lot on this team. I look at this 49ers team, and I think there is more talent on this team than the Eagles team that Chip Kelly took over a few years ago. I think that their failures last year had more to do with just a horrendous head coach who brought down the play of his roster rather than elevated. I think that if there is a lot of times that I think there's a team that everybody thinks is just going to be an absolute dumpster fire and turns out to be pretty decent. I think that's going to be the 49ers. They've got, I think Carlos is a nice running back. He's playing well before he got hurt. I think that the real American Blaine Gabbert can actually play some okay quarterback now after, you know, having several years in the league to kind of figure his stuff out. They've still got some great players on defense like Navarro Bowman. I think their defensive line is pretty solid. This is a team that I think is, unlike what a lot of people believe, is not in contention with the Cleveland Browns, the worst team in the NFL. I think they're more like 6-ish win team, maybe even a little bit if Chip Kelly can work a little bit of magic here.
I couldn't disagree more. Torrey Smith is their number one receiver. Quinton Patton is their second wide receiver. I like their defensive line. They were able to get DeForest Buckner, who I thought was the best player in the entire draft. They got him at number 7. And they had Arik Armstead, his former college teammate from the draft last year. Aaron Lynch is a good player. Navarro Bowman sort of had a shaky comeback year. Hopefully he gets better in year two from that injury, because he is one of the most fun players to watch in the league. Eric Reed is a good safety. Antoine Bethea had a down year last year, but he's still a guy you could plug in there. But the offensive line, I mean, besides Joe Staley, every guy on that offensive line had a below average year last year. And Zane Beatles and Marcus Martin and Eric Pierce. They traded up for a guard in the first round and Josh Garnett, which was sort of an odd move. And it sort of gives you a glimpse into what's going on there in San Francisco, because as we know from Chip Kelly's tenure in Philadelphia, that he doesn't like spending a ton of capital on the guard position. But Trent Baalke is running that team, and he took the mauling guard out of Stanford in the first round, traded up, gave up a couple of picks. But I just don't think there's enough talent on this roster to make any noise in the NFC West, let alone the NFC. What do you think, Brian?
I think I tend to agree more with you, Andrew. I think the defense has some players on it, but I don't think there are enough players on that defense to really hold teams from scoring at least 20, 24 points a game. And I think that's probably going to be too much for that offense to put up for a lot of the reasons you've already said. When you're talking about maybe starting Blaine Gabbert, I think there's your first problem. Carlos Hyde was a good little player last year, but Torrey Smith, Quinton Patton, there's nobody that I see on that team that I would really want to throw the ball to. So I think, yeah, they may kind of hang around in a lot of games, but I see them losing a lot of close ones.
So prediction time for this division. I think we're all going to agree on the last two teams. I think we're both going to have LA at 3 and San Francisco at 4. I mean, maybe not, Justin, but who do you have as the number one team in this division going forward into the 2016 season?
To the surprise of nobody, I'm going to go with my Seattle Seahawks for 2016, 17, 18, 19, into perpetuity. Absolutely. I think that, and I don't think I'm being a homer to say that I think we have the best overall roster in this division, if not the NFL. I think that we have a history of success, and that this is a team that has shown that it can bounce back from adversity really, really effectively. And I don't know that we can say that with San Francisco, with the Arizona Cardinals at this point. I think their quarterback is a big question mark. He could either can be an MVP and have the best year of his career, but expecting that, you know, to reap itself at, you know, this late in somebody's career, I think is a whole lot to ask. But I think their roster is really good, and I think they have a very, very high-end head coach. So I still see them taking second place. Third place, I'm going to go with the LA Rams, but you're right. I am kind of tempted to put the Niners. I just think that the reason why the LA Rams will take third place in this division is that they are just so good in division play, and that they're going to get pretty much all their wins from division opponents again, including possibly beating my Seahawks again this year. And that'll be the extent of their wins. And then San Francisco will bring up bottom, but I still see them, you know, winning maybe 4 or 5 games, maybe as many as 6, and being not the absolute worst team in the league, contrary to what a lot of people think.
So are we in consensus with this, Brian? Because we've gone on for a long time, and it was a lot of good football talk, but I agree that San Francisco's 4, 3 is LA. I'd take Seattle at 1 for now. I want to see the offensive line play the first week. I'm not going to have that luxury since it's May 9th, but I'm going to take Seattle at 1, Arizona at 2, and that's what it is now. I'm probably going to switch it 10 more times before the season, but that's what I got. What about you, Brian?
Yeah, I still think Seattle's probably the class of that division. Defense is so good. Russell Wilson, I don't really like the guy. Even when he played at Wisconsin, I don't know, something about him just rubs me the wrong way. But he's able to make plays, and it works in that offense. I think they continue to be the number one team. followed by Arizona, then and take your pick of the other two teams. I guess I'll say the Rams. I do think they're good in division play for whatever reason. They just seem to be able to win those games. Really surprise a lot of people. But Rams and then 49ers, I think both of those teams will probably finish toward bottom of the league.
So there you have it, guys. That was the NFC. We're going to do the AFC. We're most probably going to tape it tomorrow. I'm not sure when it's going to be released. But that was a ton of football talk on May 9th. And this is probably going to be a podcast that you want to even listen to again later, because until training camp, there's really not going to be much going on. You're going to have the free agent signing here and there, but the rosters are pretty much set at what they're going to be. There's only 4 months until the NFL season. We hope you join us in following it. You could follow us on Twitter at NFU Podcast. You could follow us on Facebook at facebook.com/NFU Podcast and send us an email at NFU Podcast. Send us an email at nextfanup@gmail.com. If you disagreed with anything that any of us said, or you just want to mess around, talk about other things, football, hair, rings, anything. So just follow us and let us know what you think. Thank you to Chris for joining us from his driveway and for getting his wife really, really mad at him for giving us his take on NFC South. Thank you for Sam for not being as annoying about his rings as he could have been. And thank you for you guys, Brian and Justin, for staying with me the whole time. I feel for you guys having to listen to my voice. Maybe I have to feel for the listeners too, but I really appreciate it.
No problem. Always a pleasure.
Thank you so much for having me and letting me ramble on and on. If anybody disagrees with me, you can come at me directly at REIS on Twitter. I also post the shows in Home of the 12s, a big Facebook Seahawks group. If you disagree or agree, come at me.
All right. As Pod loves to say, sorry to steal it, buddy. There you have it.
Well, I think we learned today that, this game is 4 quarters long.
Well. Wow.